Okay, good morning everybody. The time is now 10 o'clock and time for this meeting to begin. This is the preliminary meeting for the application made by Highways England, who I will subsequently refer to as the applicant, for an order granting development consent for the M25 Junction 10 A3 Wisley Interchange Scheme. I'd like to thank you all for attending. My name is Gavin Jones. I'm a chartered town planner and a planning inspector. I have made a declaration of interests responding to the planning inspectorate's conflict of interest policy, and I can confirm that I have no declarable interest that I'm aware of in relation to this appointment. On my right is my colleague, Mr. Gould, and we'll let him introduce himself to you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Graham Gould. Like Mr. Jones, I'm a chartered town planner. And I also made a declaration of interest on the 30th of July of this year. In making that declaration, I have stated that I've been responsible for determining a number of appeals in both Elmbridge Borough Council's area, Guildford Borough Council's area, and other neighbouring local authorities under the provisions of the Town and Country Planning Act. However, I'm content that my involvement with those appeals means that there is no conflict of interest in terms of my determination, or sorry, my involvement with the examination of this NSIP.
Mr. Gould and I were appointed by the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government on the 11th of September 2019 to be the examining authority, which I shall refer to as XA. It's a bit less of a mouthful than examining authority all the time. So we are the XA for this application. We will be reporting to the Secretary of State for Transport with a recommendation as to whether or not the development consent order should be made. We are also joined today by other colleagues from the Planning Inspectorate, who you may have already met, Ms. Eleanor Church, who is the case manager for this project, and we also have Mr. KJ Johansson and Ms. Candice Patton, who are the case officers. Firstly, a few preliminary matters. If you haven't done so already, can you please switch off your mobile phones or turn them to silent? Thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? Can you hear me okay at the back? I see a thumbs up and some nods. I'll take that as a yes. I've spoken to the events manager. There aren't any fire drills for today. So if the fire alarm does go off, it's a real alarm. It's not a drill. In the event of a fire alarm, going off, we have the fire exit through the door to my left. Also, there are fire exits through the doors to the side of the other room on that side. So I think there are two fire exits there, one fire exit there to my left. And the fire assembly point is in either the rear or the front car park for the hotel. In case you haven't found them already, toilets are located just at the foot of the stairs on either side, ladies, gents and disabled toilets. In terms of timing for today, if it looks like we're going to go on significantly beyond 11:30, then I propose to take a break around 11:30. If it looks like we're getting towards the end of things by 11:30, then I won't take a break. We'll just soldier on through. Is there anybody from the press here today? No? Okay, thank you. An audio recording of today's meeting will be available on the M25 Junction 10 section of the National Infrastructure pages of the Planning Inspectorate's website, as soon as possible after this preliminary meeting ends. With this in mind, there is at least one roving microphone, and if anybody wishes to speak, anybody who's not at the tables in front of me, it would be beneficial if you could wait for one of these roving microphones to get to you before you speak, and then if you could state your name, which organisation you represent, if you are indeed representing an organisation, and please speak clearly into the microphone. And because this is being audio recorded, particularly people around the table who may be speaking more than others, if every time you speak you could give your name and your organisation, please, so we can then pick it up on the tape. Thank you very much. At this stage, I must make clear to you that because the digital recordings that we make are retained and published, they form a public record that can contain your personal information and to which the General Data Protection Regulations, GDPR, applies. The Planning Inspectorate's practice is to retain and publish the recordings for a period of 5 years from the Secretary of State's decision on the development consent order. And again, for ease of use, I should refer to a development consent order as a DCO from now on in. It's a bit less of a mouthful. If you participate in the hearing process, it is important that you understand that you will be recorded and that you consent to the retention and publication of the digital recording. However, we will only ever ask for information to be placed on the public record that is important and relevant to a planning decision. It will only be in the rarest of circumstances that we might ask you to provide personal information of the type that most of us would prefer to keep private or confidential. But to avoid the need to edit the digital recordings, what we would ask is that you try your best not to add such personal information to the public record that you wish to be kept private and confidential. If you do have anything of that nature to say, then please let one of the case team know and we can make arrangements for that to be sent in separately. Does anyone intend to film or record the event today? Take that as a no. We don't have any objections to this, but provided it doesn't become disruptive to anybody. There is a website for this project as part of our national infrastructure planning pages that can be found at infrastructure.planninginspectorate.gov.uk if you haven't found it already, and that provides all the information about the application, and those pages will be updated as the examination proceeds. On the national infrastructure web pages, you can also see a range of background information which is relevant to the examination of national infrastructure projects. And if anyone doesn't have access to their own internet, the material can be viewed electronically. You can get access to the web pages, the number of local libraries, and these are all listed on Annex E of the Rule 6 letter. And these do include, for example, Cobham and Woking libraries. But there are other local libraries as well at which you can view the information. Notes of the meeting today are being made and will similarly be made available on the project website. If any individual or group wishes to use social media, report, film or record during today's meeting or any subsequent hearing, then they are free to do so. But again, please do so responsibly and with due consideration for other parties. This must not be disruptive to anyone else wishing to participate, and the material must not be misused for any purposes. Please also bear in mind that the only official record of the proceedings are the notes in the audio recordings that are to be placed on the project website. Things such as tweets, blogs, any similar communications arising out of this meeting will not be accepted as evidence in the examination of this application. The purpose of the preliminary meeting today is to focus on the way in which this application is examined. This morning we will be discussing only the procedural aspects of the application in the examination. We will not be taking any evidence at the meeting today. We're here today purely to look at the procedures. The merits of the application will only be discussed once the examination of the application begins, and that follows the close of this preliminary meeting. So the examination process only ends when this preliminary meeting closes. The examination of the application will therefore formally start this afternoon at 2 p.m, at which we have scheduled the first issue-specific hearing on the draft development consent order, at which we will be discussing the drafting of the DCO. There is also an open floor hearing this evening, commencing at 6 p.m, at which people are welcome to come along and present their views on the scheme, or if they just want to come along and listen to the views of others, that's fine as well. We intend to manage this meeting with efficiency and fairness, allowing anyone who wishes to have their say to do so. However, we will endeavour to make sure that your and our contributions are as to the point and focused as possible, so we make the best use of the time available, and so we allow everyone who wishes to speak the opportunity to do so and to ask questions about the process. We hope that you will support us in this, particularly not repeating points that others have already made. As the examining authority, Mr. Gould and I will consider the application and all representations made about it. We will investigate matters which we think are important and relevant to our report. The examination period lasts for 6 months, and that's a strict 6 months, and closes on the 12th of May 2020. After that, we have 3 months to report to the Secretary of State for Transport with our conclusions and recommendation as to whether or not consent should be given. But I should emphasise that it is the Secretary of State for Transport who will make the final decision. I would also like to emphasise that we have taken no decisions yet about the merits of the application. We have read the application documents and all the relevant representations. I would like to point out at this time that there is a relevant representation from Guildford Borough Council that they sent to us, but we didn't receive it. We now have it, so we propose to post that on the examination library site in the relevant representations, not as an additional submission. So if you've already read the relevant representations, I think there are 61 of them, please bear in mind that there will actually be 62. So that will be put on the site as a relevant representation because Guildford did send it to us in time, it's just we didn't receive it. Mr. Gould and I are planning to undertake an unaccompanied site visit of the area tomorrow in order to familiarise ourselves with elements of the application. A note of our unaccompanied site inspection will be published on the project website in due course. We will also return to the matter of site inspections later on in this agenda. The Rule 6 letter that was sent out also contained a number of annexes, including the agenda for today's meeting, Annex A, and the draft examination timetable, Annex C, and we shall come on to that in a minute. The Rule 6 letter was sent to the applicant, local authorities in the area, bodies that are statutory parties, persons who have submitted a relevant representation and thus become an interested party, or a combination of these categories. Okay, I'm now going to ask you to introduce yourself, and I'm going to ask people who wish to participate in the application, either on their own or representing an organisation, to introduce themselves. If you're here this morning only as an observer, you're not wishing to speak, then there's no need to introduce yourselves. But however, please don't forget to sign the list at the front with one of the case team so that we have a record of your attendance. Please state your name, who you represent, if you represent anybody, and speak clearly into the microphone. In no particular order of preference, firstly, I will ask representatives of the applicant to introduce themselves.
Sir, good morning. My name is Mark Chalice, and I appear for Highways England, the applicant, this morning. I'm a partner at BDB Pittmans, a law firm. And so I'm proposing just to introduce those sitting at the front from Highways England. If I can start on my left-hand side, Oliver Spencer, also from BDB Pittmans. To my right, Jacqueline Watson from Atkins. Atkins are the lead consultants on the project. To her right, Jonathan Wade. Mr. Wade is the project manager for Highways England. And to his right, Graham Bown, who is the project manager for Atkins, the lead consultants.
Can you spell Mr. Bown's surname?
B-O-W-N. And to the right of Mr. Bown is Ashley Robertson, who's a trainee with BDB Pittmans.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chalice. Have a sheet listing all the people attending on your side?
We don't, sir, but we could get one done if that would help you.
It would be helpful. It would certainly be helpful for future hearings at which you may wish to have a number of people present. It's always useful to have it on a sheet rather than my roughly scribbled notes.
That's fine. We'll get one provided for you this morning.
Okay, thank you very much. And then next, representatives of local authorities, including any representatives from parish or town councils acting on behalf of the parish or town council this morning.
If I go first, Mr. Jones, my name is David Stempfer. I spell for this S-T-E-M-P-F-E-R. I'm the major schemes manager at Surrey County Council. Thank you.
Morning, sir. My name is Nancy Elshturi. I am principal highway solicitor at Surrey County Council. Should I spell my surname? E-L-S-H-A-T-O-U-R-Y.
Very much.
Good morning, sir. My name is Jamie Puyer-Benham from Elmbridge Borough Council, and my surname is P-O-U-R-I-E-R hyphen B-E-N-H-A-M.
Good morning, sir. My name's Paul Sherman, S-H-E-R-M-A-N. I'm from Guildford Borough Council, and I'm here and I'm supported and assisted by Martin Knowles to my right of MK Transport Planning.
Thank you very much. Do we have any parish or town council representatives? I see a hand at the back there, sir.
Thank you, Thank you very much. Yes, my name is Colin Cross, CROSS. I'm the Guildford Borough Councillor for, I think, the area which entirely encompasses the A3-M25 interchange, which is the ward of Lovelace. And Lovelace constitutes the villages of Wisley, Ripley and Ockham. And I'm here to try to get involved in this conversation that's taking place, because to date we have been airbrushed out of all consultation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Having done the councils, do we have any representatives of statutory undertakers here this morning? No, in which case I turn to representatives of local and national amenity bodies, expert and representative bodies. Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. My name is Richard Max of Richard Max & Co. Solicitors. I am instructed by the Royal Horticultural Society, and to my right is David Alexander of the RHS.
Thank you very much, Mr. Max. Anybody else?
So, interested parties, you mean?
In terms of anybody else in terms of representatives of amenity bodies, expert representatives bodies. I'll come on to anybody else who wants to speak in a minute, members of the public, as it were. Okay, next, any local business representatives who've not yet introduced themselves? You may be wearing a couple of hats. You may be a local business person and also a member of the local community. But
So would it be helpful if I went anyway? So
yes.
We're an interested party. My name is Mike Murray. I represent Wisley Property Investments Limited, and we are the freehold owners of the majority parcel of the allocated site A35 in the Guildford local plan for a 2,000 approximate mixed-use residential-led community at Wisley Airfield, over which part of the DCO applies. And I'm accompanied today by Mr. Carl Craddock to my right of Savills, who's an expert in DCO matters, the project engineer Colin Mackay of WSP, and the project planning consultant Catherine Munro of Savills.
Just give the last couple of names again, please, Mr. Murray.
Yes, sorry, working backwards, we have the project planning consultant Catherine Munro of Savills, the engineering director for the project Colin Mackay of WSP, and our DCO support from Savills, Carl Craddock.
Thank you very much. And then last, but by no means least, any members of the local community who wish to speak today who haven't yet introduced themselves?
Thank you, sir. Dr. Patrick Sells, S-E-L-L-S. I represent a local business, Chase Moore Farms, which is adjacent to the proposed improvement. I also represent the community of Ockham Lane in Ockham, within 0.3 miles of the intersection.
Thank you, Dr. Sells. Anybody else? That's actually prompted me as well, is in terms of addressing people, unless you say otherwise, it would be Mr. For gentlemen and Ms. for the ladies. If you particularly wish to be called something else, then please put that in your, when you introduce yourselves to the microphone when you're speaking, Dr. Major, Squadron Leader, whatever. But if I don't hear from you otherwise, I'll work on the assumption it's Mr. and Ms. Don't want to offend anybody. Okay, before moving on to the substantive issues, are there any questions from anybody on just this introductory part of the morning so far? You're all clear. In which case, we'll move on to the examination process itself. So we're looking at agenda item 2. On today's agenda, and Mr. Gould will provide some comments about the examination process for you. Some of you will have heard this before. This might be new for some of you, though it's fairly lengthy, so please bear with us, but hopefully it'll give you a bit of a clearer picture about how the examination process proceeds.
Thank you. If for any reason you can't hear me at some stage, if my voice starts to dip, please let me know. As Mr. Jones says, some of you will be quite familiar with the process under the Planning Act 2008, but I'm sure not everyone will be. So in the interest of equality, I'm going to outline the essential features of the examination process. Detailed discussions of the arrangement will come under the timetable item later on this morning. The purpose of the examination is to enable us as examining authority to make a recommendation to the Secretary of State for Transport as to whether the proposal should receive consent in the form of a development consent order made under the Planning Act 2008. The Act has brought in a distinct regime for the consideration of proposed nationally significant infrastructure projects, which I'll now refer to as NSIP. Section 87 of the Act states that it is for the examining authority to decide how to examine the application. As the authority will intend to examine the application having regard to a number of key principles, those principles are namely independence and impartiality, rigour, focus on evidence and justification, openness, fairness and timeliness. And I'm now going to take a little bit of time to go through each of those. So in terms of independence and impartiality, examining authorities are employed by the Planning Inspectorate. The Inspectorate is an executive agency sponsored by the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government and the Welsh Government. For the examination of NSIPs, the examining authority produces an independent and impartial report with a recommendation to the relevant Secretary of State. The recommendation we will make will be based on the evidence before us, i.e. that that we have seen and that that we have read. Our recommendation will either be that the order should be made with or without change, that is, the development should be granted, or that the order should not be made, i.e. that it should be refused with reasons provided for that recommendation. Whatever recommendation we ultimately make, it is for the Secretary of State to decide the application, not the examining authority. The Secretary of State is not bound to accept our recommendations. So in the circumstances that we were to recommend that the order should not be made, it is nonetheless incumbent upon us to prepare a draft development consent order for the Secretary of State should it be decided not to accept our recommendation. In terms of rigour, NSIPs are underpinned by an inquisitor rather than an adversarial system in which the examination authority takes the lead in establishing what is important and relevant to the decision which the Secretary of State needs to make. So we will be looking for evidence what is important and relevant and testing the evidence put forward to see how robust it is. The examination relies predominantly on written evidence. As Section 90 of the Act explains, the examining authority's examination of the application is to take the form of written representations about the application. There is also provision for certain types of hearings, and we shall come to that in a moment, but the central part of the examination is a written process. Written evidence is gained through a rigorous process of interested parties providing written representations, of the examining authority asking a wide range of focused questions, requiring adequate responses to these, and of interested parties commenting on the responses to other parties' comments. In addition, we will ask for specific reports and other information, including local impact reports prepared by local authorities and matrices prepared initially by the applicant that are required to produce a report on the implications for the European sites, i.e. the REIS. With the Rule 8 letter, which we will send after today's meeting, we will be issuing a first round of questions to a range of parties. These questions will draw upon our examination of the application documents and the relevant representations made by the interested parties and statutory consultees. The questions will broadly reflect our initial assessment of principal issues, which we shall come to in a moment. There will be a significant number of written questions. These will be wide-ranging, some of them addressed to quite fundamental issues, and others will be more detail specific points. It is important that interested parties and the applicant in particular may think that some of the answers are already contained in the documentation that make up the submitted application documentation, but we need to make sure that we that all the issues which might be relevant and important are identified properly and shared so that they can be tested properly. In these circumstances, we may be requesting a greater level of detail than which is included in the documentation submitted so far. If we ask a question which covers the same ground as a point which an interested party wishes to make in written representations, please ensure that you answer the question in the terms in which we have asked it. You may still include the point in your written representation, but please ensure consistency in your responses and make cross-references where appropriate. The Rule 8 letter will set out a deadline for the receipt of responses to those questions and comments on the relevant representations. As they are received, those responses will be put on the Planning Inspectorate's project website for everyone to see. There will then be a further period, also specified in the Rule 8 letter, for any interest party to comment to the responses to the questions. This may then be followed by a second round of questions and answers and subsequent comments on those answers. This second round will probe deeper into answered points and address any new points that may have emerged. In addition to these iterations of questions, answers and comments, we may at time during the examination seek further confirmation and information in written comments under either Rule 10.4 or Rule 17 of the Infrastructure Planning Examination Procedure Rules. There will also be hearings, but these should be understood as building upon the foundations of the written representations, questions and comments. It's therefore very important that interested parties seek to engage fully throughout the written process rather than think that they can wait for a particular hearing, as their opportunity to influence the examination of this NSIP. Interested parties should also follow the documentation of evidence as it appears on the project website so that they can see how the examination is progressing. Any documentation which any party wishes us to consider will become an examination document formally lodged as part of the examination process and be available for all parties to consider. The essential ways in which a document becomes an examination document are as follows. Either as a relevant or written representation, an answer to a question from the examining authority, a written summary of any oral case after a hearing. Hearings will take a number of forms. We have open floor hearings, which are for all interested parties who wish to have an opportunity to speak generally on the project. It is led from the floor, so to speak, and interested parties will generally have a period of time in which to make a statement or talk on a matter of interest to them. An open floor hearing is scheduled for this evening, and there may be further one held if any interested party requests this. If no such request is made, we may choose not to hold a second open floor hearing. The purpose of an open floor hearing is set out in Section 93 of the Act and is to enable each interested party to make the oral representations about the application. As such, the topics at an open floor hearing are usually wide-ranging. Please note that anyone who speaks at an open floor hearing should expect to be questioned by us, i.e. the examining authority, about their representations that they have made. There are then also issue-specific hearings, and they may deal with some of all of the key issues that are relevant to the examination of the application and will be held if the authority decides that they are necessary to ensure adequate examination of the issue in question or to ensure that an interested party has a fair chance to put their case. The process is led by the examining authority and will focus on a particular matter, and we will ask questions of the applicant and invite responses, particularly from those who have raised such issues in their relevant representations. Importantly, these hearings may include the nature of the scheme itself and are very likely to focus on draft development consent order. I would again make it clear that the hearings support the written process. So if we decide not to hold a hearing of a particular issue, this doesn't mean that the issue has no or little importance. It may mean that we have obtained the information we need through the written process, and we do not need to ask any further questions or obtain additional information at a hearing. That matter will be fully considered by us in preparing the report and recommendation for the Secretary of State. Asking questions, not cross-examination, at any issue-specific hearing is at our discretion. We will hear any initial submissions on this point as we go through the timetable, but we may decide that cross-examination is desirable during a particular hearing, even if there have been no submissions on it. Nevertheless, we will not make any decisions today on that point. And then the final category of hearing are those relating to compulsory acquisitions. As with an open floor hearing, these are held if an affected party requests this. If no such request is made, we may choose not to hold a compulsory acquisition hearing. As you may be aware, the Department for Communities and Local Government issued guidance on procedures for compulsory acquisition of land in September 2013, and those affected are encouraged to read that guidance. In terms of key principles, the third that I referred to earlier is the focus on evidence and the justification. As the examining authority, we will not accept unsubstantiated assertions from any party, and any evaluation or assessment must be supported by evidence. We also need to point out that the 2008 Planning Act allows the examining authority to disregard representations if we find them to be vexatious or frivolous, or relate to merits of policy set out in national policy statements and held views on the content of a national policy statement or what it should or should not say. Importantly, as far as that point is concerned, we must have regard to the national policy statement. It is not the role of the examining authority to pass any judgment on the content of that statement. It is something that we just have to take regard of. And therefore, if anybody seeks to, in effect, indicate that they don't agree with that national policy, that is something that we can attach little weight to. The fourth key principle is that of openness. As you will see on the Planning Inspectorate's website, all the examination material related to this application is placed there. You'll also see publication advice prior to the submission of the application, known as Section 51 advice, as it refers to Section 51 of the 2008 Act. That advice is given by the Planning Inspectorate to the applicant, including notes of meetings and telephone conversations. Just to be clear, such meetings were with the Planning Inspectorate staff only and not with the examining authority. This comment to the openness of the examination will continue once the examination starts. Indeed, the proper running of the examination demands that all the questions that we put, all the evidence that you provide, all the responses to that evidence, and all other material is placed on the website for all to see. This aim is supported by the publication of the examination library, which is updated at regular intervals to list all of the documents that have been submitted to the examination and all the documents issued by the examination or the examining authority. Importantly, for all future reference, all submissions made to the examining authority as part of this N6 examination should only use examination library reference, and therefore you should disregard any referencing that the applicant has used up to this point. And we encourage all parties to use the examination library reference in their submissions. Again, really, that's for clarity. There will be a lot of existing documentation already submitted as the application came in. There are going to be a lot of other documents submitted as the examination rolls forward. And it's just easier if everybody keeps to one set of references. And that's why we encourage everybody to use the examination library. The fifth principle is that of fairness. The procedure for examining all NSIPs is designed to give all interested parties and affected parties an equal right to put forward their views and evidence, and an equal access to all of that information that relates to the application. It is, for example, the exception that cross-questioning, known as cross-examination in the town and country planning appeals regime, will take place at any hearing. Examining inspectors adopt an inquisitorial approach in putting forward written questions and in asking questions at hearings. It is intended that the examination will be as constructive as possible and will not intimidate anyone taking part. And the final principle is that of timeliness. The legislation sets an absolute time limit for the examination of this application. We are required to complete the examination by the end of the six-month period, beginning with the day after the preliminary meeting. And that means that this examination will be completed by Tuesday, the 12th of May, 2020. We will go through the draft timetable that we have set out later on this morning, but we must stress now that the effectiveness of this process depends on all parties meeting the deadlines as set out in the timetable. Adherence to the timetable is essential for us to examine the application with this timetable, we actively discourage late submissions, and there is no guarantee that we will accept anything that is submitted into the examination that was not submitted by the due date. I now need to mention the issue of costs. The Rule 6 letter drew your attention to the guidance on costs, which was issued by the Department for Communities and Local Government in July 2013. This guidance sets out the general principles for the awards of costs in relation to the examination of applications under the 2008 Act, and I would highlight the situation where costs may be awarded, i.e. where the party against whom the award is sought has acted unreasonably, and the unreasonable behaviour has caused the party applying for an award of costs to incur unnecessary or wasted expense during the examination. Before we turn to the initial assessment of principal issues, are there any questions or remarks about the examination process that anybody wishes to raise?
So may I ask two...
Can you just introduce
yourself? I beg your pardon, Mike Murray from Wisley Property Investments. Just two hopefully very simple procedural questions. First of all, where there are what we think might be errors or omissions on the website, for example, I think the revised, in the most recent submitted documents, additional submissions on the website, I think that one of the files is missing, which is the first half of the revised general arrangement drawings. How do we draw that attention? How do we raise that issue? And the second thing is where the references are within those documents for the appeal reference library, i.e. those additional pre-examination documents, the additional submissions which aren't currently part of the examination library, don't currently have examination references on them, and what's the procedure for that being arranged, please, so we can refer to them properly.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. In terms of the first point, obviously you've raised it now. There is the chance at deadline one for submissions of oral cases, so you can make your point there, but the applicant's here today and has heard what you've said. Deadline one is also in written representations, so that's your chance to raise those issues, or if you think there are still some either things not referenced correctly or some documents missing. And obviously the applicant is heard what you said and will be going back and having a look at what you contend are missing documents or wrongly referenced documents. And can you just go through the second point again, please?
Sorry, the first point was not to be difficult about this, it's to try and help, is that where for some reason either it hasn't been loaded onto the website, even though it's been provided, how we can draw that attention quickly so that that can be loaded on, because waiting for the first deadline is going to be too late to be able to see that. And the second thing is how we can understand how the referencing works, because it doesn't appear as though there are library references, examination library references on the documents as loaded. They seem to be applicant references on the face of the documents. And
As regards exam library references, I'm afraid that's always the case with NSIPs. You'll get one lot of referencing from the applicant. They use their own unique system, and then we convert that into an exam library reference. I'm afraid that's just one of the joys of dealing with national infrastructure. Up until we get an automated referencing system whereby it comes in automatically to the exam library by the applicant, that's always the case. So yes, the applicant will be referring to document 6.1, for example, and that might be, for example, APP 026 in our referencing system. I'm afraid that's just the way it is, because clearly the applicant uses their referencing system, which is logical to them. We use our exam library referencing system, which puts things in regard to the deadlines. So you'll then see the next lot of deadlines. At deadline one would be rep one, and then it will be 001 rep 1002, and then when it comes in at deadline two, it will be rep 2001. Anything else that comes in outside of a deadline is an additional submission, and you'll see them at the start of the exam library, just after the relevant reps. But there always is this tension in national infrastructure between the referencing system any applicant uses and what goes on our exam library reference, I'm afraid.
Just to add, there is already within the documentation on the website a library document, and it does have all the reference numbers in it, and that will be updated as we go. If you are struggling to find that, if you contact the case team, they will point you in the right direction. Also, if there are any documents that you've come across that are missing from the website, again, if you contact the case team, they will either do a trawl to make sure that we haven't received those documents, or they've been misfiled or whatever, and or if we can't track them down, we will make contact with the applicant via the case team, and they will make arrangements for them to be made available. Does that assist, Mr. Murray? But there is definitely, I've seen it, there is an awful lot of documentation, but there is a library document, because I've already started to use it with what we deem to be the reference numbers. Are there any other sort of comments before Mr. Smith, Jones carries on?
Richard Max, on behalf of the Royal Horticultural Society. Where we have documents that we want to introduce, how would you like that dealt with? And who will attribute the reference numbers to them, please?
In the first instance, then, any documents you wish to introduce should be coming in. You can either put them in as part of your oral submission case at deadline one, or as part of your written representation case at oral at deadline one, and that will come in with a rep one oblique 001 or whatever reference on it. So that's the time to do it, deadline one, and then at further stages, anything that comes in will be an additional submission, unless it's, for example, in response to our first or second written questions, or if it's a subsequent oral case from a subsequent hearing.
Thank you. And where documents that you may be or may not be aware that there's been some dialogue between the parties, for request for information, where material has been received from Highways England in this case, that material, if we wish it to be before the inquiry, we have to attach it to our representations.
Either yourselves or the applicant, please, yes, so that it can formally come in into the examination. It's not for us to go trawling around looking for information, so we need somebody to formally submit it into the application. Another thing I should say, of course, is whilst we give a deadline on a particular day, there's nothing to stop anybody submitting a few days before then if they wish. That's the absolute deadline. It certainly assists us if stuff can come in a little early, if possible. We'll probably deal with it slightly later. But it does take us a couple of days once we receive the information to actually get it loaded up onto the website. I'm sure you all appreciate this isn't the only NSIP case going on at the moment. We have a finite amount of people back in Temple Quay House in Bristol who can load stuff onto the websites. So with the best will in the world, things do take a day, 2 days from the deadline to actually get loaded onto our website and given an exam library reference number. The applicant wish to make any comments on any of that?
Mark Challis for Highways England. It might be helpful to note, we note that the examination library has very recently been updated. Just looking at it on screen now. But generally, where we respond to things, we will copy in the inspectorate, and so things get put on the website.
Thank you very much. Yes, you'll notice there are additional submissions that have come on literally in the last day or so. That's the area for anything that doesn't hit a deadline throughout the examination process comes in as an additional submission. That they're only in one place, though, so they don't relate to each individual deadline. We've just got additional submissions in the exam library. So if everything starts coming in late, one of the many issues with missing deadlines is you get a whole really long list of additional submissions that's just done in chronological order rather than responding to each deadline. If stuff comes in on or before the deadline, then it's much easier for everybody to know where to go in the exam library, because basically you just look at that deadline and what's come in then, deadline one, deadline two, et cetera, et cetera. So again, yet another reason to try and make deadlines, please. I'll just give that plea to everybody now.
Sorry, just making one point, sort of really building on the comment that Mr. Max made about how you get documents in and then the referencing. Once an initial statement or document is entered, by any party, it will come into the inspectorate. It will then get a reference on the library. If you then have to cross-refer to that in that document in a subsequent round of comments, then please then start to use what has become the library number.
Okay, I appreciate that item two was quite long, but really just to sum up for those who have never dealt with an NSIT before, 6-month examination process, that is a rigorous 6 months. If anything comes in after the 6 months, we won't get to see it. And it's primarily a written process. Whilst we will be holding a number of hearings, we've got a DCO hearing this afternoon, open floor hearing this evening. It is primarily a written process. So I shall move on to agenda item three. This is the initial assessment of principal issues. That's contained in Annex B of our Rule 6 letter. They're in alphabetical order. No preference in given or intended. They literally start with air quality and end with water environment. Section 88 of the 2008 Planning Act requires the examining authority to make an initial assessment of principal issues arising from the application. And as you can see, our initial assessment was circulated with Annex B of the Rule 6 letter of 15th of October 2019. As I've already alluded to, the list is ordered alphabetically and doesn't imply an order of importance. Also, we may not ask for information regarding each of these issues during the examination, and we may only do so where we have a question either in writing or at a hearing. Parties do have the opportunity to submit more details if they do so wish, in the form of written representations in accordance with the timescale. The list of principal issues is also not intended to be exclusive, and there may be other issues which, for example, arise during the course of the 6-month examination period, which appear to be important and relevant, and if that's the case, then they will also form part of the examination. Just before I invite you to speak about our initial assessment of principal issues, please remember today that we're just looking at the issues themselves. We're not having a detailed discussion today about the merits of the scheme or the merits of any of those particular issues that we've identified. However, what we are seeking is, are there any additional issues which any interested party would like to raise that you think we've missed from our initial assessment of principal issues? Some of ours are fairly wide ranging, so they should catch quite a lot. But if there's any specifically that you think we've missed, now is your time to bring that to our attention. With that in mind, we'll invite submissions regarding our initial assessment of principal issues, and I'll start again with the applicant, Mr. Challis.
Thank you, sir. Mark Challis for Highways England. We appreciate, of course, this is an initial assessment, and we think it's a perfectly reasonable initial assessment, so we have no comments on it at this stage.
Thank you, Mr. Challis. I look to my left to the local authorities.
Thank you, sir. David Stenford, Surrey County Council. Yes, we've mapped across our issues in our relevant reps to the principal issues, and we're content that all of our issues are covered. Thank you.
Jamie Puyer-Benham, Elmbridge Borough Council. Yes, all of ours have been covered in your initial list.
Paul Sherman, Guildford Borough Council. Likewise, all of our issues are covered in that list. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Does anybody else wish to make any comments about our initial assessment of principal issues? No, in which case, can we move on to agenda item 4, which is the deadlines for submission? And at this point, it might be handy to have up Annex C from our Rule 6 letter, which gives our draft examination timetable. I'm aware the applicants made a comment about deadline 2, so I shall bring the applicant in at the appropriate time to maybe expand on that slightly further. So the draft timetable, including our proposals for deadlines for submission and dates reserved for possible hearings and an accompanied site visit, accompanied site inspection, these are set out in Annex C to the Rule 6 letter. Before we get too far into the details, I would just like to comment that our examination period covers both Christmas and Easter. With a six-month examination, it's pretty hard not to miss one of those or the summer school holidays. One thing we did in drafting our timetable was to check Surrey County Council's school's timetable. And I think we've avoided, in fact, I'm pretty sure we've avoided scheduling hearings in any of the school holiday periods, including half term. We've certainly done our best to avoid Surrey's. We can't necessarily avoid every school authority in the area, but we figured Surrey would be the main one, and if we can avoid their school holidays, that's beneficial for people, particularly anyone with childcare responsibilities. So bearing that in mind, also, all interested parties should be aware that at any time after the last deadline or event set out in the timetable, we may decide under Section 99 of the Act that the examination is complete, and we would then close the examination period early. I think if you look at our deadlines, though, that we've set, it's fairly obvious that our last deadline is the 11th and we close on the 12th, so I think it's fairly unlikely we're going to be ending this examination much within the 6 months. So I suspect we'll take the full 6 months for the examination, but we do have the power to close the examination early. Following the close of the preliminary meeting, we'll issue a Rule 8 letter, which will set out the final timetable for the examination. Once we've heard any discussions today about the timetable matters, we'll do this as practically as possible after today's meeting. I think our intention is that the Rule 8 letter will be issued by the middle of next week. In terms of written representations, we've got those down for deadline 1, which is the Tuesday, the 26th of November, 2019. We propose to receive all written representations, and if you're doing a written rep over 1500 words, if you could give us a summary of that as well, please, by deadline 1, Tuesday the 26th of November. And then any comments on those written representations should be made at deadline 2, which currently, and I'm aware of the applicant's letter, but currently is identified as Tuesday the 17th of December 2019. That's our current deadline too.
Excuse me, sir. Richard Max, Royal Horticultural Society. May I just ask one question in relation to deadline one, please? We have been requesting for some time information from the applicant. This information was provided to us this morning. It was sent out to us apparently on Friday, but we didn't receive it on Friday. It's been resent this morning. I haven't had time to assess the information that we've received, nor has my team. But I do note that within the information that we've received, there's a list of information that Highways England want. So at the moment, what we're doing is we are exchanging technical information. We note that you want written representations by the 26th of November, and you will have written representations from the 26th of November, but we don't think either that we've had enough time to make these representations, because the material that we have asked for has been provided so late. And secondly, I think there will probably be dialogue between us and Highways England, because supplementary questions are bound to be raised. So what we're looking for really is guidance from you, sir, as to how we cope with this, in the sense that it's not that our written representation, we don't think, will be the final word on matters that we want to cover because of the late provision of technical information.
Unfortunately, Mr. Max, that is part and parcel of the NSIP process. Often things do change as the examination proceeds. Some things become more of a pertinent issue. Some things fall away. Information gets provided throughout the examination. What I would say is there are deadlines for statements of common ground, and it's noted a statement of common ground between RHS Wisley and the applicant, statement of common ground between Wisley Property Developments Limited and the applicant. So there are, I appreciate that it's quite tight to begin with. You've only got 2 weeks in which to make your written representation. That might not cover everything. The other thing is we will almost certainly be holding an issue specific hearing on transport and traffic matters. We'll be, if we have a request, we'll be holding a CA hearing. Again, everybody's got the right to attend those hearings and speak, and also again you can submit an oral case after that. So don't think is the whilst we clearly want to try and flush out the issues as early as possible, don't necessarily think that the written representation is your one and only chance to make comments. Clearly, as things evolve in the scheme, then there will be opportunities to do that, and the statement of common ground is a good vehicle for some of the main parties to get together and agree areas of commonality and also areas that you can't agree on as well. So there are various mechanisms throughout the six-month process. Clearly, in most examinations, things change. Information gets submitted throughout the course of it. We've got first and second written questions as well. There are a chance for you to respond to the applicant's responses, for example, to first written questions. So again, there are various mechanisms built in throughout the process because we appreciate that it is an iterative process to a degree. Clearly, the information we have at the end of the examination isn't going to be exactly the same as the information that's before us now. So I hope that answers your question. I do appreciate 2 weeks is quite tight to get written representations in. But the problem is if we delay that too much longer, especially with Christmas coming, then we're not going to get things done in 6 months. 6 months seems a long time, but trust me, it really isn't that long to hit all of these deadlines.
That clarifies matters, and that gives me the comfort that we need. You will have our written representations within the timetable, and the assurance that you've given and that the fact that it's an iterative process, that's great. Thank you.
Mr. Max.
Sir, if I can just comment briefly. I'm sorry
Mr. Chalice.
To cut in. Perhaps just to echo what has already been said, there has been a lot of dialogue with RHS. There will continue to be dialogue with RHS. And we very much hope to settle a helpful statement of common ground, as you have asked us to do, according to the timetable.
Thank you. Mr. Gould, you wish to speak?
Along similar lines, I think it's fair to say that some of the written questions that are going to come out in round one will also require you to work together, because both RS Wisley applicant and the airfield in some instances are being asked, if you like, collaboratively to provide answers to some of those questions. You'll answer them independently of one another, but it'll be obvious, I think, from those questions that you will need to have been sharing some information and or understanding of one another's cases. And that equally goes for some of the local authorities as well. I'm thinking particularly of Surrey County Council and the Highway Front. There are things that you may know that the other parties need from you to, as we roll forward. So that there will be quite a lot of collaboration one way or another going on.
Thank you. I'll move on to local impact reports then. And we're proposing to receive local impact reports from any local authorities by deadline 2, which is currently, and I'll just put a little caveat there, Tuesday the 17th of December, and comments on local impact reports by deadline 3, which is Tuesday the 28th of January 2020. Do we have any comments on the local impact reports from the local authorities side of things, since you'll be the ones doing the work?
No, we have no comments from Surrey County Council.
Nor do we have any comments from Elmbridgeborough Council.
Names, please. I know, it's easily done.
Jamie Pooyer-Benham.
Thank you, sir. It's Paul Sherman, Guildford Borough Council. We don't have a comment to either, and I think potentially just to clarify, it's, I think, the intention of all three that we'll attempt to prepare a joint local impact report to assist the process and just clarify all of our issues addressed together where we possibly can.
Thank you very much. Now, before I come on to written questions, I will say that we do appreciate first written questions is a lot of work, and local impact reports can also be a lot of work. First written questions will particularly be a lot of work for the applicant. We are aware of that. We have, in the Rule 6, given a deadline of Tuesday the 17th of December. With our Rule 8 letter that will be going out in the middle of next week, we will also include our first written questions to you. And at the moment, we've got responses to those by deadline 2, which is the 17th of December. Now, I know the applicant is looking to push that back to Friday the 20th of December. I've seen that in your letter of, was it the 5th of November?
Yes, the 5th of November.
Yes. The only thing I would say, Mr. Chalice, is, as I said previously, it takes us a couple of days to get things loaded onto our website, that, a day minimum, possibly two. In theory, the 20th of December would mean that you could submit just before midnight on Friday the 20th. With the best will in the world, that isn't going to get loaded onto our website till at least the Monday, which will be the 23rd, or maybe not even Christmas, till Christmas Eve. That is clearly not ideal. I'm sure not many people wish to be opening their Christmas presents and also reading a copy of your answers to first written questions. So if we could possibly, I appreciate though, also it's a lot of work in particular for the applicant, first written questions responses. There will be other parties, other people named in first written questions, but clearly the applicant has the most work to do, I think it's fair to say. So could we possibly push that back to the 18th? It's buying you one more day. That means that we should almost certainly have stuff loaded up by the Friday. That's my issue with the 20th, is we're not going to get stuff on our website for anyone to see, for anyone to look at, until probably 23rd, maybe even Christmas Eve, which isn't great, to be fair.
Thank you. So, yes, I do see the situation. As you say, there is a lot of work, actually, for a lot of people, but the majority is likely to fall upon Highways England. And Mr. Gould has also mentioned that some of the questions will require collaboration. So we do ask for just a little bit more time. And if it can't be 20th, if it could be 19th or 18th, but preferably 19th, that would be very much appreciated by, I think, quite a number of us in the room.
I think we'd, again, for that reason, struggle with the 19th. But if we say the 18th, that could literally be any time on the 18th. So that gives you up until 1 minute to midnight on the 18th. I think that's, having had a look at it and having discussed it with the case team, I think that probably is the best we can do. And I appreciate that isn't ideal, but because of Christmas, which does cause difficulties for everybody, I think if we push it till the 18th, but that can be 1 minute to midnight. It can clearly be after the case team have all finished and gone home, if you want. Then at least that gives us a clear run all of Thursday and whatever on Friday to get that published. Because on the Friday, remember, there might even be inset days for people. So and there might not even be schools open on the Friday and the 20th. So I think that's probably about the best we can do for you.
Okay, thank you. Mark Challis for Highways England. We appreciate you considering it, and thank you very much for that. Much appreciated.
It is something we've thought about. The construction of the exam timetable is quite a difficult challenge, especially when, as I've said, you've got Christmas and Easter intervening. Okay, so with that in mind, if I do make reference to the deadline to the 17th of December, just correct me, and we shall go for the 18th, unless anybody else has any major objections to that. I'm looking around the room. A shake of heads will be fine. You don't all need to comment, or comment if you do have an objection to it. Okay, so we'll look at deadline two being the 18th of December then. In terms of our written questions, as I've alluded to, they will primarily be directed towards the applicant, but there may be questions for other people as well, so please have a look at those. Also, we would like to make it clear that you can answer a question that's directed to somebody else if you wish to. So if there's a question for the applicant that you feel you wish to answer, then again, feel free to answer that in part as part of your response to first written questions. We don't want to inhibit anybody. So with that in mind then, we're now looking at answers to first written questions, deadline two still, but deadline two would now be Wednesday the 18th of December. And then that looks at comments on those written questions received by Tuesday the 28th of January, which is deadline three. So that's quite a period of time, but don't forget we'll have the intervening hearings and accompanied site visit and, of course, Christmas in between then. And then in terms of further written questions, should they be needed, we would propose to issue those on the 18th of Feb, which isn't actually a deadline per se, but it's a deadline for us, if you like, as examining authority. That's a Tuesday, with a response to those, deadline five, which is Tuesday the 3rd of March. Again, that's quite tight. That's only 2 weeks, but generally speaking, and I emphasise generally speaking, there aren't as many second written questions as there are first written questions. Because you all have done such a great job and we won't need to have to answer as many questions next time round. So whilst that's 2 weeks, that is quite tight, but are there any comments on the second round of written questions? Now I see a general shaking of heads.
Excuse me, sir. With your questions, will you be directing who you want to answer them, or will it be for applicant and participants to decide if they want to answer them?
No, if you look at another, you can go on the project website and look at any first written questions from anybody, you know, any other scheme that's gone through. Basically, as I said, we will direct them, so they'll primarily be to the applicant, or some might be local authorities, or it might be local authorities and Natural England, for example, or it might be RHS Wisley, might be Wisley Property Developments. It could be anybody who's made a relevant representation. Clearly, the bulk of them will be to the applicant or the applicant plus another. The only thing I would say is if you do wish to respond to questions, you can respond to questions raised that we have directed towards anybody. But we do direct them to people just to give a focus. And as I said, I do advise you to have a look at first written questions. It'll give you a flavour of what examining authorities on other schemes have asked. But yeah, the first written questions tend to be quite substantial in number, generally over 100, for example. I mean, if it's a huge scheme, it can be well into the hundreds of questions. In which case, we now come to statements of common ground. I have talked briefly about statements of common ground already. The aim of a statement of common ground, can I call them SOCGs, it's just a bit easier, is to agree factual information and to inform us as the examining authority and all other parties by identifying what there is agreement on and where the differences lie. Some of these have come in already with the application. Some are being worked up, and these are an iterative process. So as we go on through the examination, you do tend to get iterations of statements of common ground as some issues fall away and potentially other issues become raised. So we wouldn't anticipate the statements of common ground that are already in and the ones we've asked for by deadline one, we wouldn't necessarily anticipate those to be the final versions. And as I've said, there are multiple deadlines. We've got deadlines 3 and 5, and then if they haven't done so already, the final statements of common ground to be submitted by no later than deadline 8. Now, it could be that everything's done and dusted and the statement of common ground can come in earlier, but deadline 8, please, for final statements of common ground so that they're included in the examination. The other thing that's handy, and I'm looking at the applicant here, is a table showing commonality between statements of common ground. Is really useful, so it's
cutting across all of the statements.
A roadmap. I see what you mean. Yeah, a roadmap chart showing what is agreed between them all and what isn't.
Mark Chalice, Highways England, noted. Thank you.
And again, if that could be updated, but again, the key one really is the one for the final statements of common ground at deadline 8. If they are coming in at deadline 8, please, it's less of an issue during the examination, but clearly by that final one. And again, I would emphasise statements of common ground to be signed and dated by both parties, please. Otherwise, they don't carry much weight. Thank you. Just before moving on to item 5, which is hearings and the accompanied site inspection or accompanied site inspections, are there any comments anybody wishes to raise about the timetable in type issues that we've talked about in item 4?
David Stanford, Surrey County Council. I think what would be helpful for certainly the local authorities is where additional documentation is published on the PINS website is whether there's a summary document that sets out the changes in those documents. So we noticed recently general arrangement drawings have been published and further environmental information. It'd be very, very helpful to us as local authority if we have to then point that in the direction of our specialist, that there's a summary document that would point us or signpost us to where the changes and amendments are. Thank you.
Just to say what's come in or to actually give a bit more of a summary about why, an explanation of it?
I think just a summary of the explanation. So when a whole document has appeared, it would say something along the lines of, section 4 has been amended, or just no more than one or two line per document so that we're clear as to what the changes are in those revised documents. Thank you.
Obviously, we have the updated explanatory memorandum, but that generally, that's changes to the DCO, not necessarily documents that have come in. So I look towards the applicant.
Thank you, sir. Mark Chalice for Highways England. We'd like to be as helpful as possible, of course, but I'm reluctant just to say yes, because it's not clear to me at the moment precisely what will be involved in any particular case. So may we just consider on this side of the room as to how we can best accommodate Mr. Stempfler's request.
Certainly, Mr. Chalice. I presume generally when you send in your updated documents, you do a cover and letter to say what's in with them.
Yes, sir, indeed, we do that. It may be, though, that Mr. Stempfler is looking for a bit more than that, and I'm anxious that we don't bite off more than we can chew, if I can put it like that.
I appreciate that. Is that good enough with the cover and letter just to list what's there, or were you looking more at almost like an executive summary for each new document?
I'm looking for something very, very short as a summary. I don't know if the cover and letter is published on the website as well. I mean, that would be helpful if it is. Just a signpost. Some of the key changes, so looking for no more than a couple of bullet points on a document to say, just a summary of what's changed, really. I think that will really help us with the deadlines, because obviously if we're trying to then go through the document, we're trying to work through what's new in the document, so I think less is more, but just to point us in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe just a line or two to add to each item on the covering letter then, Mr. Challis.
Mark Challis for Highways England. That seems perfectly reasonable. We'd do that anyway, and we are happy to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that point should equally go for all interested parties with your documents. If there's, for any reason, something is changing, it will help the examining authority as well work our way through the various documents.
In which case, if there's nothing else from anybody, I'll move on to agenda item 5.
Sorry, I've just got one more, if I may. Yep. It's a point of clarification relating to deadline 1, but also relevant to deadline 2. Deadline 1 refers to a compulsory acquisition schedule to be provided by Highways England as the applicant. Just so we are clear on this side of the room, we think that is possibly the same as the negotiations tracker mentioned in deadline 2. In other words, a list of where we have got to with third party negotiations. And I was hoping that that could be confirmed or explained. And we think the inspectorate provides the form, but if that could be clarified, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles. We'll take that one away and get back to you on it. In which case, we look at agenda item 5, which is hearings and accompanied site inspection, ASI. Can I use ASI? It's a bit less of a mouthful. As we've previously set out, the examination follows primarily a written process, supplemented by hearings if requested and if required. Before we talk about the hearings themselves, we shall endeavour to issue agendas for each of the hearings on the project website 7 days in advance of the hearing. That gives you time to prepare for the hearings for all the parties concerned. So we feel that 7 days at least gives you a bit of a heads up of what's going to be on the agenda and a week to prepare. If we can do it before then, we will, but we're aiming for 7 days minimum. So the first type of hearing we've got is an open floor hearing. We've got one tonight at 6 p.m. We propose to receive requests for a second open floor hearing if requested by deadline 1, which is Tuesday the 26th of November. And we'd be looking for that to take place in the period between the 14th to the 16th of January. And what we should do in our Rule 8 letter when we set the exam timetable, we'll firm up what exactly is going on which day from the Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday then. And it will partly depend on what happens today and any other changes to the timetable. In my head at the moment, I'm thinking accompanied site inspection on the 14th, and then the 15th, and if necessary, the 16th for hearings, which will almost certainly be an issue-specific hearing looking at transport environmental matters. We might need another DCO hearing. We might need a CA hearing. And then potentially an open floor hearing on either the evening of the Wednesday or the Thursday. At this point, I was going to ask, throw this one out to anybody, really. Do the people here today think we're going to need a second open floor hearing after tonight? Just to recap, the open floor hearing is when it's generally members of the public come and they're able to present their case. We don't discuss the issues then, but it's for us as the examining authority to hear from interested parties and members of the public. Normally, as a courtesy, we give the applicants 10 minutes or so at the end to respond, but we don't get into debate about the merits of the issues there. The open floor hearings are for us to hear from you, basically. So we've got one scheduled for tonight. Do we think another one's going to be needed? I see a shrugging of shoulders, a general. Okay. Should we get a request for an open floor hearing, then clearly we will hold one, or we might hold one anyway. If we do, are people happy with Guildford? And this really goes for the other hearings as well, but I'll take it under open floor hearings. Are people generally happy with Guildford as a location? We realise it's a little bit away from the scheme, but we've obviously we've got Woking, we've got Cobham, but the only thing I would say is when we hold these hearings, we need a room big enough to accommodate all of us. We need some breakout rooms where the applicant can go, where the examining authority can go. We've got to have disabled access. We've got to have somewhere that's available by public transport. So when you start to factor in all of those considerations, it does tend to narrow down our range of options of where we can hold hearings. But just with that in mind, and I'll possibly look to the local authorities first, clearly we're in Guildford today. Is it a problem to you to be in Guildford for the next round of hearings? Or if you think we should be in, for example, Cobham or Woking, can you suggest suitable venues that meet all of our requirements for the case team and the applicant to have a look at?
David Stenford, Surrey County Council. We're perfectly happy with this venue and Guildford.
And is that the same with the other local authorities as well? Obviously, Guildford Borough Council might be quite happy being in Guildford. So in which case, I look to members of the public. I mean, is Guildford a major problem for you? Because what we don't want to do is be criticised, oh, you should have come to Cobham, you should have come to Woking, you should have come here and there. We do have some restrictions on the venue, but if you can suggest other venues that clearly can accommodate us all, that have disabled access, that are accessible by public transport, then now's the time to let us know, and we can investigate them. I can't guarantee we'll go there, but at least the case team can investigate them and the applicant can investigate them.
Francis Porter, Elm Corner resident, and I think this is suitable, as you say, public access, and another open meeting for the people that obviously can't make tonight, I think would be a good thing to schedule in. Thank you.
But just to reiterate, you're fine with Guildford as a venue, though. Anybody else wish to comment on the suitability of Guildford as a venue? Okay, well, if we don't hear from anybody else, then we may well be back. Might not be this hotel, but we may well be back in Guildford then for the next round of hearings. Sir?
Yeah, I think...
Whilst you're waiting for the microphone, if you can give your name as well, please, sir. Guildford's okay. Right, okay, well, I won't labour the point, but I haven't heard any nays to Guildford as an area, so I imagine we should try and look in Guildford again then. In terms of the issue-specific hearings then, the topics for these will become clear as the examination progresses and we'll notify the interested parties and the applicant accordingly. We've got our first issue specific hearing this afternoon, starting at 2 o'clock. As I've said, that's to consider the draft development consent order. The agenda for that's already gone out, is available to view on our national infrastructure website. And we'll talk more about the purposes of the DCO hearing at the start of that hearing. There's no point me going on about it too much now. As I've said, we've secured reserved dates of the 14th to the 16th of January for the next round of hearings and the accompanied site inspection that we'll come on to in a minute. As I said, I'm looking at the moment probably the 14th for the ASI and a combination of the 15th and 16th indoors for the other hearings. We'll advise of those in due course. We've got a deadline one. Tuesday the 26th of November to notify us about a compulsory acquisition, a CA hearing or another open floor hearing. We've also got hearings programmed in for the 24th to the 26th of March. So you can either notify us now about those, or I do propose that we put another notification period in, one of the deadlines, probably deadline 4, for people to notify us again about those hearings that are going on that may be required for the 24th to the 26th of March period. So when the final timetable is done, you might see those as being fairly generic hearings. I won't necessarily specify exactly what type of hearings they're going to be. The reason for that being is we might not know yet exactly what the 24th to 26th of March ones might be, so that might be a bit generic. In terms of compulsory acquisition hearings, as I've said, we do make provision for those if requested. There's one timetable during the period 14th to the 16th of January, and also if required, there's also time during the period 24th to 26th of March. Again, notification of a wish to speak at a CA hearing should be made, certainly the first CEA hearing should be made by deadline 1, Tuesday the 26th of November. Does anybody have any comments about the various hearings to make? I'm looking around the room, I can't see anybody indicating a wish to speak.
Thank you, sir. Just one point, if I may.
Yeah, Mr. Challis.
On the hearings, we're perfectly content with the dates that are proposed, 14th to 16th January. We would just request, if we may, that we be given as much notice as possible of those hearings.
Yes, we
Because we need to make a number of arrangements, as you'll appreciate. Not least newspaper notices.
Certainly, yes. I mean, I would say, as I said, we'll come on to site inspection now, probably looking to do that one on the first day, the 14th. I mean, clearly none of us have an idea what the weather's going to be like then, but we need to pick a date. And then we'll be looking at, I would say, almost certainly a issue-specific hearing dealing with transport, environmental matters. So I think you can notify your consultants that they're likely to be needed on either the 15th or the 16th. So I think it's highly likely. What we don't quite know yet is about the CA hearing, another DCO hearing, and an open floor hearing. But I imagine there will be some combination of those as well.
So, yes, indeed. I appreciate you need to consider what's appropriate. Apart from notifying members of the team at Highways England to be available, there is a need to prepare statutory notices.
Certainly,
with
yes,
details
yeah.
of where
yeah,
the
that.
Hearings will be. I'm told that procedures are such, and printing deadlines and newspapers are such, that we need to know where things stand no later than the 9th of December, if I can
9th
put
of
that
December.
Date to you.
Okay. That date is noted. We should be able to be reasonably clear in the Rule 8 letter, the exam timetable, as regards to January meetings. We might have to be a little bit vaguer on the March ones.
No, that's fine. It's the January ones yeah. that are instant concern, but thank you.
I thought that might be the case. Right, which brings us on to site inspections. As I've already said, Mr. Gould and myself are going to do an unaccompanied site inspection tomorrow, so that's us effectively driving parts of the network and looking at anything from publicly accessible land. We're not allowed to go onto private land during our unaccompanied site inspection. In terms of the accompanied one, the ASI, as I've said, we're probably looking at that on Tuesday the 14th of January. Before I firm that up, though, do any of you with local knowledge know of any events going on the 14th of January that might make that an appropriate date? Nothing. Is there anything going on at RHS Wisley on the 14th of January, for example? No, thank you. Because we try and pick a fairly normal day for our site visit to give us an idea. Of course, we've got ASIs in January. Who knows what the weather's going to be like then? It might be lovely sunny day, it might be thick fog, it might be snow. Clearly, if we do have to cancel the ASI because of inclement weather, and it has to be reasonably bad, but clearly if it's not safe to go, then we can't go. But I would state that we do have time reserved in the 24th to the 26th of March for the ASI if needs be, but clearly we'll try and get it done in January if we can, but we are, being January, we're slight hostage to fortune weather-wise. If there are any specific places that any of the interested parties wish us to visit, then again, please can you notify us of those. The case team and the applicant would be drawing up an itinerary. If you could notify us of those by deadline 1, please, and any places that you think we really need to visit, and then the applicant can consider those. And we'll look to publish the itinerary for the site inspection at least a week before the event takes place. The other thing to bear in mind is that the accompanied site inspection will enable us travelling on certain routes almost as a journey. So I think the one thing Mr. Gould and I wanted to get out of the ASI is a sense of travel, as well as just arriving at random places. It would be very useful to us if some of the key routes could be factored in. It might be that we literally just travel the entire route and end up back where we started again, but so that we've got an idea of routes proposed by the applicant and also any routes that are in contention as well. Through Ripley, for example, might be an idea to travel. So it won't just be a question, unlike some, where you're just looking at vantage points of a particular site. We'd also like to get some kind of sense of a journey as well on it as well. Does that make sense, what I'm saying, Mr. Chalice?
Mark Chalice from Highways England. So yes, it does, and we'll certainly factor that in responding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, sir. That is a very important point for RHS in the sense that we will be, it's not just about looking at places, it's about understanding travel patterns. So we'll liaise with Highways England and make sure that all the different variations of the routes that we like you to travel are included.
Thank you. And the same from the local authority as well, if you could, Surrey County Council with your Highways hat on as well in particular.
I think it's fair to say that when you see the written questions, you'll be asked the various parties about routes and which routes you think are going to work in terms of the reconfigured layout. So, yeah, we are going to be spending some time looking at routes.
And I'm just looking at the applicant here, really. Clearly, we are travelling on potentially the M25, the A3. These are major roads. So we would need to be aware of the health and safety implications thereof. I don't think I need to say too much about that. It should be fairly obvious, but in terms of, you know, safe places to stop, for example, how we travel, clearly we as the examining authority can't be alone with either one party or the other party. We either have to be just on our own, or we need to be with both parties. We don't need necessarily to be with all of you, but we do need to have some representatives from both sides there. Basically, we're not allowed to be with one party or the other on our own for obvious reasons.
Thank you, sir. Mark Trellis, Highways England. So that's all understood, not least the safety point. And we will, you know, I'll give you our suggested places to see and routes to take and who from Highways England would be attending, but we of course take your point that it will be others attending with you, it being an unaccompanied site visit. Thank you,
Mr. Chalice. And just one other thing, if you are providing any high-vis gear, we're not allowed to wear anything branded. So we've either got to bring our own or you've got to give us something that's not branded. Sorry, just one of those things. In terms of site inspections then, so if list of sites or preferred routes as well, please, the case team, as for the applicant to see, deadline 1, 26th of November. Thank you.
I think important that it might also be indications of number of attendees, because we might be travelling on coach, minibus, whatever, and it would assist the applicant to know the quantity people need to cater for.
Does anybody have anything else to say about agenda item 5? We're almost finished. I know I've gone past 11:30, but we've only got a couple more matters. So I'm proposing we soldier on, unless anybody is particularly needing of a 5-minute comfort break. I see a general shake. Let's soldier on then. Agenda item 6, if there's nothing else on agenda item 5. Procedural matters. As I've said, we've made a procedural decision to have a DCO hearing this afternoon, open floor hearing this evening, don't need to talk much about those. We have made procedural decisions already under Section 89.3 of the Planning Act 2008. They're set out in Annex F of the Rule 6 letter. Don't need to say too much about those. The applicant has responded. Information has came in to accompany your response to Rule 6 letter of the 5th of November 2019. Thank you for that. There would potentially appear to be a few issues still with the numbering, ordering of plans, 1 of 3, 2 of 8, that kind of thing. If you could just have a double check on the plans that are submitted, just to make sure that we've got all the correct reference in. I appreciate that the amended plans you sent in have hopefully rectified most of that, but if you could have a double check of that, please, because there might still be a few that are mislabeled. That would be most appreciative.
Thank you, sir. Yes, Mark Chalice, Highways England. Is it just the planned sequencing and numbering that you think is incorrect?
From what I've read so far, that is it. Yeah, right. The actual sequencing, it looks like maybe done by different people and they haven't quite coordinated how they're actually referencing them. Yet, so if you could just have a final check on that, please, because otherwise it just makes it confusing for everybody if we're not quite sure which plan we're meant to be looking at.
Thank you for pointing that out. We'll do that. Thank you.
The other thing was hard copies of documents. I appreciate we're trying to move into this brave new electronic world, but it really is much easier to look at big documents as a paper copy. And I would like to thank you for the paper copies you've already submitted to the examining authority of documents that are on the part of the exam library. So what I would say, where possible, please, if you've got a big document, i.e. 50 pages plus, if you could send in two hard copies, please, that would be really appreciated. It's so much easier to look at a paper copy for me. That's just the way I work, I'm afraid. I know we're not meant to, but plans in particular are much easier to look at in paper. Trying to scroll through an electronic plan on a laptop is really not that easy. So that really is much appreciated. I would say in terms of the iterations of the DCO, up until the final version, obviously we need both the clean and the track changes version electronically, but I'm happy just to have the track change version. I don't need a clean copy until the very final copy. Then I'll need a paper copy clean and a paper copy track changes. But up until then, just a paper copy with track changes would be much appreciated.
Mark Chalice, Highways England, noted, so we'll do that. We also are not proposing to do the format check through the inspectorate and probably until the last one, if that's all right.
Yes, that's fine. Again, it's really that final version that's really useful to have paper copy of when we come to write our report, rather than trying to scroll through electronically all the time. Are there any other procedural matters, Mr. Stemper?
Dave Stemper, Surrey County Council. I mean, likewise, we would benefit from hard copies of the document. I think up to now, we've been provided with hard copies of the drawings, but clearly it's much easier to have hard copies of the drawings, particularly where we're having to deal with our specialists and there's cross-referencing of documents between documents and drawings. I think, I can't speak for my colleagues, I think the same goes for my colleagues who may wish to speak on that as well. And the track change version, again, is very, very helpful to us.
Thank you. I unfortunately can't compel the applicant to provide hard copies to you, but I can ask their good offices to do so, but I shall reply to Mr. Chalice. Sorry, I appreciate it. We are all meant to be electronic these days, but I'm sure we all agree. Sometimes it's just easier to look at a paper copy.
Mark Chalice, Highways England. Thank you. Yes, I mean, on reasonable request, perhaps, I should say, we're more than happy to do that. I mean, I think we all take the point about it's just sometimes easier to see the paper copy than the electronic copy. So we've very much taken that on board. Thank you.
I see a nodding of heads from other local authority representatives as well. So I'm sorry, Mr. Chalice, you may have a few more paper copies to do with certain things. Are there any other comments about procedural matters? Agenda item 6. No, in which case I'll move rapidly on to agenda item 7, which is, are there any other matters that we haven't touched on? Again, talking about in terms of the procedure, how the examination is going to proceed, that anybody would wish to raise. As customary, I'll start with the applicant.
Mark Chalice from Highways England. So I don't think we have any other points. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chalice. Anybody from local authorities, Mr. Stemper?
Nothing from me. Thank you.
Anybody else? A shaking of heads is fine. Anybody else would like to raise any other matters before I draw this to a close? No. In which case, I appreciate it's been a long morning this morning, and I appreciate I haven't done a break at 11:30, as I said, but we're not too far beyond that. So I'd like to thank you all for your attendance and engagement this morning. We'll send out the Rule 8 letter as soon as possible. Middle of next week, we'll take on board the exam timetable change and any other procedural decisions we may wish to make as a result of today's discussion. We've got the examination of the application via the DCO issue specific hearing back in this room 2:00 this afternoon, please. So once again, I would like to thank you for your attendance at this preliminary meeting. It's now 11:48 and I can confirm that the preliminary meeting is now closed. Thank you very much.